Beginning this afternoon, staring at people without consent could be classified as a form of sexual harassment. An Australian nightclub has banned staring at strangers with a zero tolerance approach. Special safety officers will be deployed. It's at a club in Sydney called Club 77, and they're going to the safety officers enforce the rules. I'm joined now by the chief executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. That is Nolene Blackwell. Hello to you.
Hello, Ciara. Good to talk to you.
It's lovely to speak with you too, Nolene. And I just want to begin with, I guess, this staring. What classifies it as staring?
Yeah, so I'm not going to be able to set out what exactly is staring, but I bet you anything, you know, as I do, as a lot, if not every one of your listeners will know what it is like to be the subject of a stare of somebody who is staring at you, making you feel uncomfortable, just making you feel just unhappy with it. And so staring in the context that the Australian club is talking about is actually a form of intimidation. It's a form of abuse. It's a form of making people uncomfortable. And I mean, I just think actually I can totally see why somebody would take this up as a news story, because it sounds like, oh, you know, now you can't even look at someone anymore. But that's not the case. Lots of us, most of us, I would nearly say everyone except I can't prove that, knows what it is like to be stared at, or indeed even to stare at somebody to make a point, to make them feel uncomfortable, to make them feel like they've done something wrong, or to make them feel in some ways that they have to adjust their behaviour. So it seems to me that what the club is saying is, look, we want the people who come into the club to feel comfortable, to feel happy, to feel entertained. That's why you go to a nightclub. And if somebody doesn't feel that way because somebody else is abusing them through their actions of staring, that there is someone you can approach in the staff, that you can come and say, I'm not one bit comfortable about that. And in some ways to just recognise it's not right. You know, we don't actually like it in our normal lives. You wouldn't like it in a nightclub. And sometimes in a nightclub where people are trying to meet up with other people, they may not always know them. You know, you're just trying to have a good time. It's just you can forget the normalities. You can forget what respect for somebody is like. And this is to remind people that they have to have a bit of respect for their fellow nightclub goers.
So
I don't know this club, but I'm defending them because I like the idea of people feeling comfortable in the club.
Yeah, and I think everybody likes the idea of people feeling comfortable always. But, you know, in reality, unfortunately, that's just not what life is, I guess many people would argue and say. I want to go through the key points. So this unwanted staring and leering, they're examples of sexual harassment. This is according to the Australian Human Rights Commission. Now, this club, it's Club 77 in Sydney. The owner there says the new safety policy mimics others being implemented around the world. The move is being applauded by many, but it's led to some people leaving negative reviews on the club's website online, obviously different social media platforms. This is what I think can potentially be difficult for people. There's going to be the security guard. They're going to be wearing a high visibility pink vest, and they can approach the patrons who feel they are being harassed, and then obviously ask those who are harassing them or they feel harassing them to leave, etc., etc. The legalities, I know you won't be able to go into all of that, but if something like that was potentially to happen here in Ireland, how does a club, you know, prove that that person was staring in an uncomfortable, intimidating way? And also, when people are under the influence of alcohol, and some people in nightclubs under the influence of hard drugs, etc., they're not fully in their right mind. So, you know, they may be looking, and technically someone could say staring, but they may literally just be looking through someone, if that makes sense.
They may indeed. And if they are in a position where they are under the influence, are intoxicated or drugged to an extent that they can't control their behaviour, to the extent that they make other people uncomfortable, then actually the security officer has a job to do with them as well. In the same way that it is illegal in our pubs in Ireland to sell drink to somebody who is drunk. It's illegal for a publican to sell drink to somebody who is too drunk already to manage the drink. There has to be a level at which clubs take responsibility for the people that they allow into their clubs and that they allow to continue there. So you're 100% right in saying this is the kind of thing that I suppose is just setting a tone, and that when it comes down to a particular case, who is to say I was just looking or I was staring? But I think what this is saying, the club is saying, we will ask our security officers that if they're making somebody uncomfortable, to approach somebody else, to ask them to behave in a way that doesn't make other patrons uncomfortable. And that is part of the belief that you can have a good time without abusing somebody else, without harassing somebody else. We, as you know, the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre runs the national 24-hour helpline, where we get people calling us where they feel that they have felt harmed, that they felt kind of violated, that they felt that somebody was after. And it's not always because somebody said something. People can be verbal, people can be physical, but there are also so many ways that in people's behaviour, they can behave in a way that makes somebody else feel uncomfortable without saying something or physically touching them. And staring, leering is that kind of a situation where you could have, you know, a group together who just maybe incite each other to really appalling behaviour, and it makes other people feel uncomfortable. And the trouble is that you don't actually, you know, you're not thinking of the other person if you're staring at them or leering at them. You're thinking about what you're doing yourself. The impact of that, depending on the person you're staring at, can be huge. Somebody can be have a history of people staring at them, leering at them, attacking them perhaps as a result of that kind of thing. You don't know what you're doing if you are behaving in a way that you know is making people uncomfortable. Okay. But you're really only interested in satisfying your own instinct to be that sort of more powerful person who has the power to abuse, and that shouldn't be acceptable in any place of entertainment, in any club.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time this afternoon. That is, of course, the chief executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. So staring at people without consent, that could be classified as a form of sexual harassment. If we look over in Sydney, that's exactly what one club has introduced, Club 77. They announced the update to its safety and harassment policy to the patrons on an Instagram post saying any engagement must begin with verbal consent. It's incredibly interesting how this will be rolled out, how people will be pulled out, will there be any legal issues, etc. And of course, if something like this does come to these shores. But thank you, of course, as always, to Nolene Blackwell there, the chief executive of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Lots of action happening across the weekend here in the county, and very exciting. The playing fields are, the festival is on from today, the 26th and the 27th of August. And I have a pair of tickets to give away for tomorrow's festival. That is Saturday the 27th, and of course Kildare's own Leah Hart will be headlining tomorrow's festival. She is on the stage tomorrow at about 9:15, but there's lots of stuff happening. The artists begin on the stage tomorrow at about 4:30. You know, there's so much to see, so much to do, and it's just kind of a nice day out in the local area. There's lots of questions that can be answered in terms of the festival on the Playing Fields Fest Instagram page and other social media platforms. But I'd like to give you guys a pair of tickets this afternoon. If you'd like to win them, do text me in here, just playing at 0833 97 97 97. Just pop in your name and hopefully I'll be giving you a call back with the tickets this afternoon. So as I said, a pair of tickets for Saturday's Playing Fields over in Clain GAA grounds, and the text 0833 97 97 with your name and the word playing. And of course KFM has been giving away tickets all this week, which we're very happy to do so. Now, something we won't be very happy to do so is pay more for electricity and gas. But this afternoon, The electricity provider SSE Airtricity has announced the rise or the increase in electricity prices by 39% and gas by 35.4%. Dara Cassidy of bonkers.ie, the head of communications there, does join me. How are you, Dara?
Hi, Ciara. I'm good, thanks.
So a significant, is to put it lightly, increase. Is this the biggest increase by an electricity provider the state has ever seen?
I think so. It's certainly the biggest of the past 2 years and the biggest since I've been working for bonkers.ie. Electricity prices are going up by 45%. Gas prices are going up by 46%. That's the unit price. And then the electricity standing charge and the gas standing charge is also going up by 8%. So it's an absolutely whopper of a price increase. I was expecting it. I wasn't expecting it to be quite so high.
What were you expecting, would say, then?
Well, smaller, to be honest. I mean, 40, you know, almost, you know, adding on another 50% to people's bills is unheard of. I've never seen an increase this big before. But unfortunately, when you look at the price of energy on wholesale markets, which is what is driving so much of the energy crisis and driving these price increases, it is at absolutely record levels. And believe it or not, Ciara, we're probably going to see more price increases over the coming weeks.
I think we definitely believe that, Dara, after the past few months. So they're coming in from the 1st of October. Mm-hmm. So there's about 250,000 electricity customers in this country and 85,000 gas customers. Just briefly, do you know, Dara, kind of in terms of priority or in terms of customs, where SSE would fall in Ireland compared to the other electricity providers?
Well, it'd be one of the big ones. So, I mean, they actually have 250,000 electricity customers and 85,000 gas customers. Now, there's around over 2 million electricity customers throughout the whole country and around 600,000-700,000
okay.
gas customers.
So they've got about an eighth of the... Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about the fourth to fifth biggest supplier. So, you know, they're one of the big ones. I mean, this increase is going to be felt by, as I said, you know, 250,000 electricity households and a lot of gas customers as well. And it's adding around €600 a year. Just this price increase now is adding around €600 a year to people's electricity bills and €500 a year more to their gas bills.
Wow. The company last increased its prices in May. Obviously, mm-hmm. you know, the past few months have been very mild, I'm sure, compared to what we'll see post-October. I was talking to someone the other day. Really, winter only starts, I feel, in Ireland come January, because we had a very mild December last year. I'm not saying you don't need your heating, etc. In the next month or whatever. I'm not saying you don't, but just it's a long winter, I guess, in Ireland. We don't have the longest in the world, but it's really putting people under pressure. It's making the big decisions now as what possibly financially they'll be able to do. We know the budget is coming out next month, at the end of next month, in about 1 month's time. And all this news is just putting more pressure, I'd say, on the government to make big changes.
No, it is. And the pressure's coming from everywhere because interest rates are going up. The price of food is going up. Food inflation is at close to 10%, which is the highest it's been in well over a decade. Broadband costs are going up as well. And of course, gas and electricity prices are going up. But some of the price increases that we've seen over the past maybe 18 months have added well over €2,000 a year to people's gas and electricity bills. So it's a huge amount of money. And that's just the increase, people's actual gas and electricity bills. And I going to be anywhere from maybe, you know, 3,500 to 4,500 euro after these price hikes come into effect. So it is a huge sum of money, and it's going to push a lot more people into energy poverty. Energy poverty is defined as when you spend more than 10% of your disposable income on energy. And
10% of disposable income.
Yeah, well, your net income, income after tax. And I'd say a lot of households are going to fall into that category. And, rent is at record levels. You spend now probably, 30 to 40%. Most people will spend 30 to 40% of their income on either the mortgage repayment or their rent. And now you're going to have maybe, spending 20% or more on your energy. So it doesn't leave a lot left for the luxuries in life or the little things in life that we all want and need.
Yeah, I definitely don't. Sorry, my big, deep, heavy breath. It's a lot for people to take in. And I think we need to just make note of that it's very overwhelming. And it's just kind of bad news story after bad news story in terms of the electricity. But I do just want to mention this again. We did cover it on the newspaper review this morning on Kildare Today. But there is a moratorium now. There'll be an extended moratorium on disconnecting energy suppliers to vulnerable customers this winter. We know the Commission for Regulation of Utilities announced this yesterday. It's going to begin on the 1st of October, the day that SSE are increasing their prices by 39% and 35.4%. Both electricity and gas there until the end of March, the 31st. Previously, the moratorium only began on the 1st of November. This is good news, but, you know, this was good news before people who were SSE electricity providers heard about the increase. And one would assume that other providers may follow suit.
Yeah, no, we are going to see more price increases, unfortunately, but the announcement from the CRU that it was enhancing consumer protection was obviously welcome. And as you've mentioned, there's going to be a ban or a moratorium or a pause on electricity and gas disconnections over the coming months. But then what happens when that ends? It's not really addressing the crux of the issue, which is the fact that gas and electricity prices are at record highs and people will struggle to pay their bills. So whilst I welcome the move and the CRU needs to be commended, it's not, as I say, actually addressing the main issue, where we're still going to be stuck with record prices for months to come. I would say to listeners, though, that disconnections are usually only carried out anyway as an absolute last resort. It's quite rare for ESB networks or Gas Networks Ireland to come barging into people's houses to, you know, to disconnect the electricity or gas meter. It's very, very rare. And if people are struggling with their bills, despite the ban on disconnection, do engage with your supplier. Do not bury your head in the sand, or do not say, well, I can't be disconnected, so I'm not going to play ball. You could just be shoring up problems for yourself in the future, because if you do not long-term engage with your energy supplier and pay your bills, your credit rating may be affected, you may struggle to get a mortgage or loans in the future, and you also may struggle to switch supplier in the future. And of course, as you know, switching supplier is a great way to save on your energy costs. So I can't overemphasise that enough to listeners. If you are struggling, do engage with your supplier. And some of them, like SSE has announced today as well, they do have these hardship funds where they have money available to help those most in need.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. That is Dara Cassidy, Head of Communications with Bonkers.ie. So SSE electricity increasing the price of gas by 35.4% and electricity by 39%. That is from this October 1st. And many people will be under pressure, of course, already under pressure, should I say. And of course, we want to help you here in KFM, and you can get on to the Newbridge MABS. The number there is, that's the Money Advisory and Budgeting Services, I should say. So in Newbridge, 0818 072 600. Kilcock, 0818 072 590. And Carlow's Money Advisory Budgeting Services, 0818 072 070. Lots and lots are under pressure at the moment. There is help out there. Please reach out. And of course, if you're finding things overwhelming, there are mental health supports there, like the Samaritans, 116 123, AWARE, 1800 80 48 48, and the Mental Health Support Text Service, 50808. Teachers are concerned that some children, beginning junior infants, are in quotes overprepared in academic skills such as numeracy and literacy. This is a new study finding this. It's contained in the latest Children's School Lives study. It's following 4,000 children across 189 schools to learn about their experiences. And I'm joined now by Associate Professor of Education, Jennifer Simons, and she's also the Joint Lead Investigator on this study. Good afternoon to you, Professor Simons. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
So tell me a bit first about the Children's School Lives Study. What is it?
Well, the Children's School Lives Study is a Irish nationally representative study of children who are making their way through primary school and into their first year of post-primary school. And this study was commissioned by the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment. And the study has been going on since 2019. And since that time, we've been following the children and their families, their teachers, their school principals, as they progress through primary schooling. And we have two age groups. We have the younger age group, who are our early childhood cohort, and we have the middle childhood cohort.
And from your understanding with what these teachers have said, being concerned that children are over-prepared in numeracy and literacy, how can that be? And why would teachers worry about that over-preparation? Because it's the age-old saying, isn't it? Fail to prepare, prepare to fail.
So I think what our study showed was that the emphasis on learning academic skills was perhaps more emphasised in the preschools than it was emphasised by the teachers in the primary schools. So I think there may be just a small mismatch in the tiers of schooling and where the emphasis can be placed. The teachers in the primary schools were not so much concerned about the children being very overprepared when they got there. It's just that the focus of the teachers' concerns was elsewhere. So the teachers' concerns at the start of primary school are on the children's social and emotional development and on their ability to manage themselves well in a social setting. And these were also issues that were very much prominent in the earlier settings, who are preparing children to begin primary school by looking at social and emotional functioning as well.
Yeah.
So I think that what our study captured was that the teachers in the primary schools were less concerned about academics starting primary school and much more concerned about social and emotional development.
Yeah, they also call them self-management skills, things like being able to put on your coat, making friends and regulating one's emotions. They say that's more important to target at that age. Does that mean that the vast majority of junior infants in Irish schools are not emotionally ready to be facing that experience?
No, it doesn't mean that specifically. It means that the teachers, the thing that they would like to see the most of, the emphasis being placed on, is the children coming into the schools having had, being able to manage themselves in classrooms. But this isn't something that you learn before you come into a primary school, because necessarily so, the environments of a preschool and a primary school are different. There is a different emphasis on different kinds of play in the early years curriculum, and, learning through play, and also on different kinds of academic skills that are being taught. So in the primary school, the social environment is slightly different. So the teachers understand it's going to take the children a while to prepare to be able to adapt well in the classroom setting in the primary school. It doesn't happen overnight. So it's almost a retrospective wish that they could have come having done it slightly earlier, but they can't, because you don't learn it until you get there. It's like starting a new job. You can't have the job skills perfect until you've done the job for a few months. So I think that's more about what it's like.
The study also notes the disconnect, or signs I should say, of disconnect between parents and teachers. This is over expectations around learning at preschool and primary level, especially when it comes to the primary level. Is that related to the class sizes we have in this country?
The communication between parents and teachers at the primary school transition is very varied in our study across individual schools. So in some schools, the parents report that there's very high levels of communication before their child begins. And in other schools, some parents report that they don't have much contact with the schools. So it might be a matter of school size rather than class size. And here I'm just hypothesizing things that haven't exactly come out of our data.
Yes, I understand.
So it depends on the school. But in all of the research that I know in school transitions, the communication between parents and schools is really vital. And so this is something that is really, we would really as researchers encourage schools to do as much as they can of, and for parents to reach out to schools if they don't feel like they're receiving enough communication.
Now, it's noted also that many parents and children see big school as a place of work rather than play. Again, going back to the fact that the teachers would like to emphasise the social and emotional skills. The importance of play-based learning came up as well in the study. In terms of those teachers that you did speak to, how many of their schools or classrooms would be dealing with play-based learning, would say, on a daily basis?
So I don't have that exact figure. We didn't measure it in that exact way. But I can say the ASHTA curricular framework is part of teachers' everyday practices in primary schools. And that's not just referring to play-based learning. It's a lot more than that. It's a lot broader than that. The importance of play and the link between that and the social and emotional learning focus from the teachers is that really when you are playing, you are in a perfect environment for learning. So it's almost like when you create an environment for learning, when you create an environment for play, you turbocharge that environment for learning because you're emphasizing to the children curiosity, self-directed exploration and learning, social interaction. Play can be quite a social activity. And even if you're playing with another object, if that's a toy, that's a form of kind of pre-social interaction. So all of these things that play does in, you know, when you have an environment that's conducive for play, you're setting that environment up for learning. So actually, play and learning are the same thing. And so in the slightly earlier years of childhood, when classrooms are set up for children to play, then those children are learning. So I think what the teachers are maybe expressing through this emphasis on social and emotional skills, self-care, but also talking about play, is really they're describing an environment that's conducive to learning.
One teacher told yourselves, this is a direct quote, "I think what would help if they could all come in, know how to stack a chair, put on their coat, put away their lunchbox. You'd be surprised the amount that come in not knowing that. I'm not asking any child to be able to come in and read, do sounds. That's all done in school and it should be done there." Now, one of the study's key conclusions or key findings was the need to strengthen the cooperation between the preschool years and the primary schools, supporting that transition. What were the particulars that came up most with teachers that they'd like to see implemented?
The study didn't ask for recommendations from teachers, but what we did find was we did survey what the teachers' current practices were, and we did identify, as you said, areas that the practice wasn't quite as frequent in. And some of these issues around there being not so many administrative links between preschools and primary schools, despite, again, the excellent work that's being done with the NCCA in this area. It's showing the gap between the two systems themselves, and that's not going to be addressed until there's more funding for early years education in Ireland to give the teachers time in the early years settings that they can actually use that time for administrative work because they've got, you know, more secure employment, you know, more regular work hours. They've got, you know, professional development built into their roles as teachers in early childhood settings. So it's really kind of demonstrating the gap between the two systems, which is really underpinned, I think, by funding.
Now, this Children's School Lives, the latest study, it's the fourth to date. It's based on findings that were gathered during 2019 and 2020. And if anybody would like to see the whole study, you can head on to the Children's School Lives website. That is cslstudy.ie. And of course, Dr. or Associate Professor of Education, Jennifer Simons at the University of College Dublin, is the joint lead investigator on that study. Thank you for joining me this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Some news for the County Kildare Singletons. There is a call out for a new rural dating show, and I'm very happy to be joined now by the casting producer for that new show, and it is Kite Entertainment that is producing it. Celine Dominguez joins me. Hello to you.
Hiya, Ciara. How's it going?
I am going very well. So this new rural dating show, what's happening on it? How is it different from all the others that are out there?
Oh, well, it's a new commission for RTE that Kite Entertainment are making. And Kite make Gogglebox and Ireland's Fittest Family and lots more. And what we're doing is we have created a show that we're looking for singletons that are living in rural Ireland that are finding it hard to meet people, whether that's because they have long working hours because they work on a farm, or because they just haven't had, they know everybody that's living in the area, they just haven't had that look. And basically what we want to do is bring three singletons from the city or large rural towns down to them, and we want to organise activities and organise a few dates and see if we can get a love match.
And the good thing about here in County Kildare is you get both the rural area and I guess the larger like towns that would be quite close to, you know.
Yeah, so we're looking for the daters from the towns. So, you know, if you're in Newbridge and you're in a town or a large town in Kildare, we want to hear from you as well. But at the moment, we're really focusing on just people living in rural Ireland that are finding it hard. And, you know, if they're a farmer and the three city dwellers or the townies come down, you know, they're going to be helping out in the farm. You know, if it's the equestrian community, they're going to be, you know, sweeping out the stables. They're going to get, you know, their hands dirty. And they're going to see what life is like in that rural town for that person.
Have you done so yourself before?
Have I done? No,
have
not
you ever
quite.
Given it a go? No.
No, not quite.
It's going to be a shock, I'm sure, for many people listening who do decide to get in touch. But they can get in touch with you, Celine. There's an email, countrylove@kiteentertainment. That's kiteentertainment.com. There's also a phone number, Celine, 087-182-7204. And you're encouraging, obviously, all here eligible in the county to get in touch.
Absolutely. We'd love to hear from Kildare people. So, you know, give us a call. Look, if you want to learn more about the show, I'd love to hear from you for sure.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me. That's Celine Dominguez. She's casting producer for that new dating show with Kite Entertainment. They're calling for County Kildare singletons. If you want more information, just call us here in case you missed any of those numbers.